It's Your Health Radio, a special podcast series presented by Henry Mayo Newhall Hospital. Here's Melanie Cole.
The California Department of Public Health made a recent announcement on Valley Fever and what it means for your family and your health. Welcome to It's Your Health Radio with Henry Mayo Newhall Hospital. I'm Melanie Cole, and today we're really going to talk about Valley Fever and what it is and what it means for us. Joining me, as always, is fan favorite, Dr. Anuru Rai. He's a primary care physician on the medical staff at Henry Mayo Newhall Primary Care. Dr. Rai, always a pleasure to have you with us. What's Valley Fever?
Great question. Always a pleasure to be on board. So Valley Fever is essentially a fungal infection that someone gets in their lung. And it's important that particularly in California, we are prone to it just because the environment that we live in is more prone to having Valley Fever, this particular type of fungal. And the actual name of it is the genus, specifically as coccidiomycosis is the type of infection. So that's the organism that causes it. It can be a pretty brutal fungal infection, but thankfully, we have ways to capture if someone has an infection and ways to treat it.
It always seems that these infections that we hear about are lung related. I mean, the lungs are certainly subject to these kinds of things. So first of all, tell us where it's happening. It's called Valley Fever, but where are people getting it and how?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the name itself, Valley Fever, particularly I think before it was called San Joaquin Valley Fever, and because that's where the majority of it was found. And to give you a better idea, the way this fungus works is these are spores that are naturally in the environment, particularly in Southern California in that San Joaquin Valley area. And these spores just rest in the soil, do the normal thing, and have a normal cycle. It's when they're disrupted is when we'll have an increase in these spores that are airborne and people inhale them. Particularly, actually, since we are in fire season, usually bushfires, and our firefighters tend to have quite a bit of exposure to them. So it is something that we want everyone to be aware of. If you're around construction areas, you do have a little bit higher site or a propensity to get these infections as well. So it is something that is known in the environment. It is something that it can be quite intense at times, but it is something that involves the lungs. Because more often than not, that is what you use more than most of your body. Breathing is important. And that is the way these spores enter. And they're quite small. So we really don't know when we inhale them till we start noticing the symptoms.
So it's stirred up by the dust and, as you said, construction, right? It's stirred up.
Yes. So the idea is these spores are resting on the soil. Disruption, meaning that either construction, outdoor events, even earthquakes, these natural disasters can also stir up these spores and cause them to become airborne. Once they're airborne, as you know, in our Southern California environment, there can be quite intense winds, and that could carry them over to certain areas as well. Like all sort of pathogens, when they get introduced into your lungs, that's when we start having the reactions, the inflammation, and the pathology of this kind of condition.
Is it contagious, Dr. Rai? Once you've acquired this, is it something you can pass on because it's airborne, or no, not really?
Ideally, it's not something that you could pass on to others, but it is something that I would say to a certain degree, if you're coughing or depending on how much of the fungal is resting in your lungs, theoretically can, but majority of the times it's something that we catch on pretty early. So it is something that rests in your lungs. And when you cough, it's just the symptoms of inflammation that's trying to act and kind of take care of the fungus. It is something that is not very subtle. The symptoms are quite different than something that you would have a pneumonia for. Symptom-wise, I would say you would have things like night sweats, which are quite unique in these organisms, especially with fungal infections, weight loss, the cough, that can seem like pneumonia, and it can behave in that way too. But the introduction of night sweats and high fevers gives us more of a red flag when it comes to doctors about saying, hey, this may not be a bacterial infection. The other thing is usually antibiotics will not work with this. So the classic sort of presentation you might have is, you know, someone who presents to your office or to the ER, says, hey, this might be a pneumonia. Let's treat you with antibiotics. They're not getting better. When we do the tests and we find out it's a fungal infection, that's when we start switching the therapies, and people start to make improvements pretty quickly.
What are those therapies?
The therapies right now include oral, which is fluconazole or itraconazole. There's a lot of these medications, miconazole, so these antifungals. And the IDSA, which is the Infectious Disease Society of America, has clear guidelines on treatment for this condition. And for the most part, they're quite effective. They're well. In fact, I had a couple of patients I've treated and they got better within a couple of days, even though they were actively battling the fungus. And you could see it on imaging, like on x-rays, where you could sometimes see a mass, like a fungal ball there too. And even though they have it, they're behaving fine. They're breathing normally. It's just the antifungal that's taking effect. And it's important for everyone to understand that each person does recover at a different rate. So we want to make sure that if you're, you know, recovering in a couple of days versus someone who takes like maybe like a week, that is a variability in how a person's physiology is for that part. So these symptoms are something that we as physicians always ask about. And for the most part, patients tend to come with us with these symptoms because they seem it's a bit odd. You know, I'm having night sweats, I'm coughing. And after a thorough history, actually, that's when we could find out saying, hey, you might have a fungal component. Like, for instance, if you're hiking outside, if you're around an area where there's a lot of dust, you may not realize it, but it's very dusty in that area. That gives us as physicians clues about, hey, let's test for fungal infections.
Wow, that's wild. Now, is there any way to prevent it if you're around these construction sites? If you see it's sort of a dust storm swirling up, would a mask help? Does that filter out those spores? Is there any way to prevent this?
That's a good question. Ideally, masks can be effective, but these spores are quite tiny and minuscule. In fact, it does take a lot of spores for you to ingest to get the disease too. It's not like something, you know, where one or two spores enter your system, you get infected. It does take a quite large number amount of spore ingestions to have that effect. For the most part, your house does have a pretty good system for ventilation where it can filter in a lot of these small molecules. So we do have the system in people's houses that do that. So it's very rare to have it occur, but usually you would need a high burden of fungal spores to have an effect. This condition, I wouldn't say it is common, but it is, I would say, more common in California than the rest of the US, particularly because of the area it lives in and the fact that we have a climate, some say, that kind of flourishes these organisms and causes them to spread too with the winds. But unfortunately, I would say it's not really, I would say, a direct way to prevent it, but the normal stuff to prevent these spores are, of course, hygiene, making sure you're washing anything you feel might have those spores on them. If you're around a construction site, you feel like it's very dusty, try cleaning up essentially your bed, your clothing, just to kind of get these spores out. Masks do help too, but the house itself does have a ventilation system that generally does a good job of filtering out these tiny particulates.
Wow. So because this was a recent announcement by the California Department of Public Health, I'd like you to give us your best advice for, you know, we hear about all these different things, Dr. Ryan, and it gets a little scary, a little confusing. Sometimes people go a little bit numb to some of these things, but we do have to be vigilant because each of these new things introduces something maybe we didn't know so much about. And that's why we like you here, because you teach us so much. So what would you like people to know about Valley fever?
That's a good question. So just to give you a better idea too, the reason why California, at least to give you a little bit of background, we'll talk about a little bit of the highlights. California itself, some of the studies that I've come across, particularly from, I think it was UC Davis or Santa Barbara, where they mentioned that particularly after these bouts of drought, this fungus tends to flourish more for some reason, particularly just the climate, but we are a very drought heavy area. So that is something we want to keep an eye out for. If you feel like a drought is present, just be cautious about traveling in areas that have high dust, high wind, particulates in the air. So the best thing to do is if you're traveling any particular place in California, or if you know there's construction there, or if you know there's fires in that area. So those are particularly some points to kind of keep an eye out for. And as we know, we are a fire-prone state. So that is something that we see more of as well. The best thing to do is if you're worried about Valley fever, talk to your doctor. They could kind of educate you a bit more, get you a bit more up to date on some of the symptomology that we found out. And they could also keep track if your area has, and I would say, a certain increase in Valley fever. So we do tend to try and track those areas down, saying, hey, there's Valley fever that occurred here. We have a good way of processing that and kind of getting our patients ready for those sort of particulates. The best thing to do is if you have asthma or immunocompromised, and if you're feeling you might have symptoms similar to it, talk to your doctor. Usually for immunocompromised and patients with a weak immune system and somewhat weakened lungs, they're more prone to this sort of infection. We want to catch it early. We want to make sure your lungs are healthy. And the best thing to do is to stay in areas that are clean. And also just having a healthy diet, less stress, that helps your immune system entirely as well.
Well, it certainly does. And knowing where it is and how it's transmitted, that's just so important. So thank you, as always, Dr. Rye. I mean, you really are such a great guest with so much information, this wealth of knowledge that you're willing to share with us. So thank you so much again for joining us today. And you can always visit our website at henrymayoprimarycare.com for more information and to get connected with our providers like Dr. Anaru Rai. You can also visit the free health information library. There's so much great information you can trust there at library.henrymayo.com. And that concludes this episode of It's Your Health Radio with Henry Mayo Newhall Hospital. I'm Melanie Cole.